Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is Episode 3, recorded January 12th, 2009.
Hi, Russ.
Hi.
What groovy, wormy critter are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about grindleworms, Incitraeus bulkholzii, if that's how you pronounce it. It's not actually easy for me to say. I don't know if I pronounced it correctly or not, but that's the name that's used for grindleworms.
Okay. So, who should culture grindleworms?
Well, almost anyone with small to medium-sized fish, or almost any breeder of just about any fish, because these are worms with a wide range of sizes. The small ones, when they're newly hatched, are not much bigger than microworms or Walter worms, but the larger ones can get up to about an inch long. The biggest ones I've seen are about an inch long, so that covers a pretty wide range of fish. A baby guppy can eat a small grindleworm, but a larger cichlid can be interested in an adult grindleworm. So really, a lot of fish can take grindleworms. They're very, very useful that way.
So these are pretty multi-purpose.
Yeah.
Where do we get them?
Well, the internet, once again, is a great source. Aquabid has grindleworms for sale. Aquarium clubs or just fellow aquarists or other sources. Again, one of the live foods you're not likely to find in a pet store, but a lot of potential there. They do ship fairly well.
Okay. What do we need to have in order to culture the grindleworms?
Okay, well, grindleworms are a little bit more involved to culture than some of the other worms. A lot more involved, I'd say, than vinegar eels, and a little more involved than maybe microworms. You're going to need a plastic container. Well, plastic usually is most convenient, but you could use wood or something else like that in other cases, I guess. But in general, plastic, that's what I use. I would suggest a container size of at least 3 to 4 cups in volume or more. If you start it with a small culture, you should start it with a small culture container and kind of let the culture grow into it, and then you can move it on to another culture, because if you start out with a really large container with a lot of medium in it and just a few worms, it's quite possible for them to kind of get lost. They won't reproduce as well, and it takes a longer to establish the culture. So just take that into account as you're choosing the size of your container. You need a lid that closes very tightly, but also allows for ventilation in some way. It's good to, well, let me tell you what I've used in the past. I have used pinholes, just using a pin or even a small paper clip to puncture a lid for ventilation, but I've steered away from that and have used a couple of other methods. My favorite method now is to make a hole that's maybe 1/4 inch square in the lid, make about 4 of those holes in the lid, and then fill them with filter material, like a filter pad, cut up a filter pad and kind of twist it, insert it through the hole, and then let it expand as you let go of it, and that keeps insects out. You can also kind of loosely keep the lid on without, you know, pushing it down, and then enclose the entire culture in a plastic bag, and then make some sort of provision similar to the one with a filter padding in it, something like that. As long as you're getting some air, they don't need huge amounts of oxygen, but they do need it, and you also need to keep insects out. Fungus gnats really like grindleworm cultures. Fruit flies will get in there, and so on. So you really want to make sure that nothing gets in or out besides the air. And that's about what you need for the container. As far as the culture medium, there are many, many different directions to go with this. Some people use the coconut fiber from the outside hull of coconuts. I've used that with success. You can get it fairly cheaply. It's sold as bedding for reptiles and amphibians and so on, hermit crabs.
At pet stores?
At pet stores, in blocks that are dried and compressed. And so you need to remove a portion of that block and rehydrate it. You don't need very much of it, because just a few cubic inches of that will expand quite a bit. And so just, you can take a little bit off with a knife or even a saw or something like that, and expand it and kind of see how much that makes, and then use that to guide how much you need to hydrate, because you don't want to hydrate the whole thing at once. It's going to be a lot. That'll be too much for you if you use a whole brick. But it's cheap. You can get it for just a few dollars for one of those blocks, and it'll last you quite a long time. Other people use mixtures of peat moss and potting soil, or just peat moss, or just potting soil. Other people use different types of worm bedding that are used for sold for use with night crawlers and so on at stores that sell bait. My personal favorite that I've, one of the methods that I'm using now, is soilless culture, where you use green scrubby pads that are used for cleaning bathrooms and kitchens and so on. You can also use expanded foam or even filter padding or different materials like that. But the two that I have the most experience with are the coconut fiber and the green scrubby pads. And right now I think I favor the green scrubby pads over the coconut fiber for several reasons. One is that you have fewer problems with pests.
Okay, so if I've got my plastic container and my green scrubbies, how do I set up the culture?
Oh, well, there's one thing I should mention before we go on, is that for harvesting the worms, you may need a piece of plastic or glass, or some people use needlepoint canvas, things like that.
Something
flat that you can use to cover the coconut fiber with, not just the lid, but it actually lays right on top of the coconut fiber or your other substrate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using the soilless culture style, you may not need it as much. But if you are using a soil type culture medium, you'll probably want that because the worms will adhere to it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. It makes it easier to harvest them.
Okay.
Now, once you've got your, let's talk about both types. Once you've got your, let's say, your soil type, whichever one it is, it doesn't really matter at this point. Once you've got it in there, and you add your worm culture, your starter culture, then you need to put some food in. And we'll talk a little bit more about the food later, but put a little bit of food in, not too much at a time, and make sure the coconut fiber is moist. It shouldn't be soggy, but it should be damp. Then close it, keep it in a fairly dark place, and wait a few days, and check on it and see whether they're eating the food or not, and if they're not eating it, is it getting moldy and so on, and kind of pay attention to that. If you're using a soilless medium, like the green scrubby pads, you need to put a stack of green scrubby pads in the bottom of a otherwise empty container. If it's a small container, like 3 or 4 cup capacity container, you may only need 2 or 3 pads in a stack. Make sure you rinse them well before you use them. And then put enough water in there to cover probably the bottom pad with water. If you have 3 pads, let's say, you cover the bottom pad with water, and that will keep the rest of them moist enough so that the worms can be comfortable on them, and then just add your worms. If you are using a soilless type, try to get the worms without the soil medium that they come in. If they do come in a soil medium, try to get as many pure worms as you can, which you can do by removing them from the surface with tweezers or cotton swabs, or you can do by putting all of the culture medium into water in a small container, and then the worms will eventually find each other and ball up and check on it frequently. Once they've formed a little ball, you can remove that ball and put it into the soilless medium.
Okay, how do I remove the ball?
You can remove it with, once again, with tweezers or with a large eyedropper, turkey baster, or something like that.
Okay. What do they eat, and how often do we need to feed them?
Well, there are all kinds of things that grindleworms can eat. They'll, in the wild, they eat, you know, decaying organic matter of just about any description. I do have a very large culture of grindleworms that are a combination culture with redworms, in fact, compost worms, that just live on kitchen scraps, basically. And they do really well. They grow to a very large size. They're very vigorous, healthy worms. And so some people do it that way. In my soilless cultures, however, I don't do it that way. Grain-based foods are commonly used. Oatmeal is one that's used frequently, and so on. You can also give them little veggie bits, like bits of zucchini or things like that. But I found that in the soilless cultures, I've been using a steady diet of kitten food.
Mm-hmm.
Went and bought a big bag of kitten food, and that seems to be working really well. An advantage of the soilless cultures is that you can add the kitten food dry, and because of the high humidity in the container and the fact that the green scrubby pads are kind of wicking water up to the kitten food, it eventually just it becomes moist, and then the worms eat it. Within a couple of hours, they're eating it. If you're using a soil-based culture, the medium is usually not damp enough to do that very quickly, so you do need to pre-soak any food that you're going to add of that sort. If it's a dry food, you'll need to pre-soak it, or mist it once you add it. But either way, kitten food, I think, is the best all-around food. You'll see in the resources on the website that a lot of people agree with me, but you know, you have quite a few options there as far as food goes.
Okay. And how often?
Well, you should feed them approximately every 24 hours and make sure that as closely as possible to this rule, you should try to make sure that there isn't any extra food when you come to feed them, but they shouldn't go without food for very long either. Every 24 hours you should feed them and not find extra food. If you're doing that, you're on the right track.
So you have to kind of find your own balance with your own particular culture.
You do. And when you start out, that will mean quite a small quantity of food if you're starting out with a starter culture. But as time goes on, you'll need to increase it. When you start with a culture, you might just use one small piece of kitten food kibble like that. And then within a few weeks...
One kibble culture.
Yes. But within a few weeks, you might be adding four. And then maybe eight the next week, and so on, until the culture reaches a certain balance and you find out how much you have to feed.
Okay. How do we harvest them when we're ready to do that?
Well, that is a good question, but I should mention before we go on, though, with regard to feeding, just to make sure this is clear. One reason you don't want the food to sit there too long is that it can start molding. If you do notice food molding, remove it, put in fresh food. That can be a bad situation. You don't want to culture fungus, you want to culture grindleworm. So just make sure that you're not adding so much that it funguses. If it does, remove it. Okay, now back to your question. How do you harvest them? There's a couple ways to do that. If you do keep a piece of needlepoint canvas or a piece of plastic, if you're using a plastic container, a lid from the same type of container, you can cut that down so it fits inside snugly over the most of the surface of the substrate. You can use that and just set it on top of the food. And a lot of the worms, as they're eating the food, will crawl onto the lower surface of that container, especially if you keep it damp, if you mist it before you put it back on and so on. They'll crawl up onto that surface, and then you can use a cotton swab or something like that to gently scrape them off into some water and rinse the water a few times, you know, let them sink to the bottom, pour the water off and rinse a couple of times until they're free of any substrate or any food that happen to be clinging to them and so on. And then you can use a turkey baster, an eyedropper or anything like that to squirt them up, suck them up and squirt them into your tank. I do need to talk about harvesting the worms from a container, a soilless container. Usually, if you're harvesting worms from a soilless container, you can use a cotton swab or tweezers just to remove them right from the surface as they're eating. You can use a square piece of plastic container needlepoint canvas too, just as you do in a soil type culture, but it's not as necessary because you're not trying to separate them from
the
coconut
the
fiber or the soil or whatever it is, so it's not such a big deal.
Okay. If the culture production begins to slow down or the culture gets overcrowded or things like that, what do I do?
Well, grindleworms breed very quickly. You can have a very small culture and within a few weeks have a very large culture. So this is something you need to know about. If everything's going well, they will be breeding and they'll be breeding fast. So if the culture production begins to slow down, it's a sign that there's a problem and you need to try to figure out what that is. Is it too damp? A sign that it's too damp is that it looks soaked. The substrate looks soaked. You can see worms maybe trying to crawl up the sides because they're uncomfortable. It will start to smell a little more strongly than normal. A good culture smells, if you're using a soil type culture, it smells something like dirt. And if it starts to smell kind of putrid, then you know there's a problem. And you probably ought to subculture it. Take half of that medium out, put it into a new container, and then add fresh medium to both containers. And just look at everything. Are you feeding enough? Are you feeding too much? Think of all of those things. And if you notice that you have any problems with any of those things, you can try to correct them accordingly. And if the culture gets overcrowded, actually, the solution is the same. It's time to split the culture in half. Just take half the culture material out, add it to a new container, put fresh medium in both containers. If the container is otherwise healthy, it won't take it long to bounce back and start reproducing once again very, very quickly.
Okay. Let's see. Last troubleshooting question. What if we find mites or springtails, things like that?
Okay, now this is one of the most common problems, is to find pests in the culture, and especially in a soil type culture. Mites and springtails compete with the worms for food. There's some debate over whether they actually harm the worms or not directly, but whether they do or not, they can be a problem for the culture because they compete for food. Now, usually, their presence does mean that there's something that's not quite right with the worms, because if the worms are reproducing quickly enough, they can usually outcompete these fairly well. But sometimes they'll show up anyway, even if the culture is otherwise doing well. There's a couple of ways that you can use to remove these. If you're starting out early enough in the culture, I've noticed that springtails, I actually saved a culture once just by opening the lid of the container and blowing on it. And then I blew off enough springtails every day. I did that for about a week or so. I did that enough that the worms bounced right back, and then I didn't have so many problems with springtails. Basically outcompete the springtails, right. And I was able to save the culture just by doing that. Because springtails jump, and so blowing on it would cause them to jump, and they jump right out of the culture container. That's probably not going to work for everyone in every situation, but it happened to work for me that once. Mites, they're a lot more difficult to deal with. You can use a toothpick or a pin if you're just starting out and there are just a few mites in one of your culture containers, to just kind of tease them off of the surface and then put them onto a tissue or something and crush them, get rid of them that way. Another method that people have used is to just fill your culture container with water until it's just a little bit above the surface of the water, and mites will float up to the top, and then you can pour them off and do that several times. The worms can survive in water for quite a few hours without any damage, and like I was saying before, when they are in water, they'll tend to find each other and form little clumps, and then you can move those clumps of pure worms to a new culture container without any mites in it, hopefully, and start over. That's probably the best way to deal with that.
Now, have you found, you've kept both soil cultures and soil-less cultures.
Yes.
And have you found that one is easier or one has fewer problems with insects and mites?
Yes. I think we talked about it a little bit already, but I have found, so far at least, that the soil-less cultures tend to have far fewer problems with mites and springtails. I haven't had any problems, really. Well, I can't say any problems, but far fewer. Only one of the soilless cultures that I started had any mites in it. I'm not finding any in any of my cultures now, whereas with the soil cultures, I sometimes had that problem. I would say my largest soilless cultures, in defense of cultures using soil-type substrates, the largest one that I have, the one that also has redworms in it, does not have any problems with mites. There may be a few mites in there. I'm not saying it's mite-free, but I never have problems with the mites trying to outcompete the grindleworms.
Is that because it's so big, there's just so much space that it's just not much of an issue?
It could be. Larger systems, larger ecosystems are more stable, as most of us who keep fish recognize. It's, in general, easy to keep a larger tank healthy than it is a very small one. And I think it's the same thing with grindleworm cultures. Because the culture is so large, and there are several species in there besides the grindleworms themselves, that the ecosystem tends to stabilize, and so mites just aren't an issue in there.
Okay, good. Is there anything else you want to tell us about grindleworms?
Well, one thing I would like to say is that redworms are a good thing to culture in a combination with grindleworms. They work pretty well. And if you do want to do that, you set up, the culture needs to be bigger in general. Basically, you're setting up a redworm culture and you're adding grindleworms to it. But if you're interested in that, you can see our upcoming podcast on redworms and find out how to raise redworms and then try adding some grindleworms to that culture, and you'll end up producing quite a few of both. And redworms, being larger, are very useful for even larger fish, but they start out pretty small, so even things like dwarf puffers can take baby redworms. And then you can go all the way up the spectrum to very large fish, because they get pretty big. So that's something to consider as well.
Great. Thanks for listening to us today, and we hope you join us again.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.